What's going on, everybody? It's been a little bit, but welcome to episode number 11 of the Tony V Project here for his officially second time now on the show, Mr. Robert Clark.
Yeah, here we go.
And bringing our buddy here, introducing him for the first time, Scott Zimmerman.
First time.
Number one.
And I was telling Robert when I was saw him downstairs before they came up here that anyone who remembers, what was it? It was episode two, right? Episode two that Robert was on made me look bad. That episode, rolling in here looking all good in his suit. I probably had a hat on, t-shirt, and didn't look too hot. And so I thought, knowing that both of these guys were going to come in looking primed, that I was going to wear a suit. That I was going to match their attire. And then I woke up this morning and I was like, fuck it, shorts, baseball tee, right. I'm good to go.
You don't even own a suit, I bet.
I do. Wow. But you wouldn't know it. Well, and I don't think, probably need to get some of like those mothball things so that they don't start to eat away at it because they never get used.
This is a rental, so I don't have to worry about it. Yeah.
Well, you guys look good.
This is my bar mitzvah. Yep. I wore this in my bar mitzvah. Yeah.
Just recently. I brought these guys on. They are both killer salesmen. And I obviously wanted to talk a lot about that, but there's a bunch of other stuff I wanted to talk about as well. I know I want to talk about something that Robert brought up, the idea of struggle and glory and just the whole mindset that kind of goes into success. I really want to kind of revisit that topic and kind of let these guys chime in and give their experiences and their thoughts and just kind of have like a collaborative kind of showdown with all of it. And they actually don't know this yet. But one of the other things, and we may have to run down, I'll grab them and then we'll come back up and do like a little live segment. And if we don't actually have the props, then we can just make it up. But I wanted to do a thing with the sales posts that I've been making the last few days on Instagram and Facebook. And I want to, A, read over them and kind of go over your thoughts on what people's answers were and what you guys think the real answers are and everything. But how you would sell like a particular item. And I mean like random off the wall stuff. Like I was going to grab like a tricep rope pull down, come it up here, and assuming you're going to sell it to, you know, to one of us, how you would sell that. Yeah. So be ready because we're going to go there.
Okay. I'm not Billy Mays. Did you even see my responses on the Instagram post? I'm like giving myself a 6.
I know.
People are like 10, 9, 10. I'm like, oh, never mind.
Lance throwing in the 8.91, like it's some sort of like figure skating score or
Lance
something like that.
Stud. I mean, there's the studs out there, but anyone who says a 10, that always throws me off.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I don't think you can say a 10. I think if you say a 10, no offense to the people who do the 10 out there. But I feel like if you throw a 10, like there's no way you can actually be a 10 because anybody that's really a 10 knows that the highest score you can give yourself is a 9 that you could get better.
Right. Exactly. You always have to room for improvement.
Did you vote?
I didn't vote.
Oh, my God. You didn't fax him the Instagram post?
No, I know I should have. Oh,
I give myself a 5.
Before we get to that, though, one totally random thing I wanted to talk about, because as I was going through reading some of the comments today on Facebook and just gathering some info for what we're going to talk about, there's that, everyone I'm sure has seen now, there's that banner at the top, if you've been on Facebook, Scott, lately, that now talks about like, hey, if you want to check your privacy settings, because we all know the shitstorm that Zuckerberg's in right now and Facebook for everything. But the thing that kind of blows my mind is, and I don't know if I'm the only one in this boat, I see everyone or these people getting bent out of shape about this whole social media and your stuff getting shared. I'm like, motherfucker, it is a public open network that you use for free, and the purpose of it is to put your information on there so you can communicate with other people.
Exactly.
How that's like the biggest bunch of like hypocritical ridiculousness that I've ever heard in my life.
100%. Is it the first program that people have put all their information into? Like, have you ever applied for a mortgage?
Yeah.
Have you ever been on a website or bought something online? You have an Amazon account? your
everything's being shared.
Yeah, everything's being shared.
Not like that. Every picture you put out, everything is public anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you want my take real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. You saw the Zuckerberg's, you know, interview and testimony. Yeah, yeah.
He is an awkward dude.
He's a robot.
Yeah.
That was not a testimony. That was a business meeting. I guarantee you. The government wants to know what Zuckerberg can do for their own personal benefit at some point down the road. Believe me, that's not a bad take on it.
It's not a bad take on it at all.
Yeah. So, because it just baffles me how little people know about kind of like the background. Like people say algorithm just because that's like the closest thing. That's the next word they know how to describe. It's like, okay, not everything's an algorithm, but yes, we are watching you and we are reading all your emails.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. It's, and then some of the panels or the Congress or whoever was there, you know, asking all the questions, like the ignorance for some of them, like the one that blew my mind the most was this guy asked this question, or maybe it was a girl, I forget. And he says, so you have this free service.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how you stay in business. Mark Zuckerberg was like, we have ads, sir. Yeah. And he's like, okay. Like, do you not know anything?
Exactly. I know. Most don't.
Yeah.
No. Most don't.
No.
Exactly. There's a little bit
of a disconnect.
Exactly.
But to the kind of the main topic, you guys both know, I can give you guys a little bit of an update and everyone who's watching this an update. The book's official title, if you guys didn't catch it already, is The Legacy Mindset.
Love it.
And it's gone through a handful of different rewrites and concept changes and things like that. And I'm finally to where exactly where I want to be with it. I'm about, I think, 7 or 8 chapters in out of the 10. It's correct. About 90 pages or so right now, shooting for right around that 120 mark. Damn. And when you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about the whole struggle versus glory, that relates really well with literally like chapter 1 of my book.
Perfect.
And so I thought it'd be kind of a cool thing. And I'll let you kick it off because it was your idea to talk about it. But just like maybe the disconnect that people have when it comes to not only what it takes to be successful from a mindset standpoint, but just like what the perception is of what people don't see necessarily.
Absolutely. Absolutely. These are a really nice touch, by the way. Can they see the logo?
Yeah,
awesome nice. Job. I feel terrible. I should have brought a gift.
Well,
I'm on twice and I don't bring a gift. Come on.
Clearly not enough people watched that episode because when I opened it live on air, whatever you want to call it, I said to everybody, to all my future guests, the bar has been raised. Don't forget your gifts.
I do remember.
And everyone seems to be forgetting to bring gifts now. So,
well, I'm really excited about my new mug. So. Yeah. Okay, so to get back to your question. So the reason I threw that out to you is because, like, in my eyes, you're going to start getting some flack like this. Reason I say that is, you know, you've built a phenomenal business, right? And now with 2 locations, looking to expand more. And things just look like, oh, Tony, yeah, he drives a Range Rover. He's got this business. Money's just coming in. Like, he just happened to strike that gold mine of an idea. Yeah. And it's like, people always see someone successful and that's what they focus on. And maybe there's probably people that have tried to build gyms or are trying to build gyms who know you or talk to you. And they're like, I don't, like, all they see is successful gym owners. And they're like, why is what I'm doing not working?
Why is it not working?
And they get down on themselves. They get depressed to the point where, like, either, you know, could be bad thoughts or one, they'll just stop trying. They'll quit.
Yeah.
They'll quit the game. And it's like, no one knows what you went through to build this, to put this together. Like, it does not happen overnight. You don't get a blank check to go, you know, fill
Wouldn't
a building.
That be amazing?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, I, you know, what's really cool is I've been following you since before you had a gym. So I think I've really seen like the ground up. And so, you know, it's not an overnight success, but from the outside in, anyone meeting you today or yesterday or tomorrow is going to be like, oh yeah, that guy's got it made. Yeah.
And I think a lot of what you're, and I think it would have been bad 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, but I think social media, like you alluded to, I think that makes it worse only because most people on social media only, most, not all,
right,
post only the good stuff. They don't post right. the hard stuff.
Exactly.
And so then when everyone sees all they're successful, they think that's all they associate with that individual is the good.
Right.
But like we were saying right before we, when we were just kind of, you know, shooting the shit before we fired the camera up, it's, I think it's the same thing as any sort of big music star, whether it be Justin Bieber or the guy or girl who wins The Voice or whatever. Right. They think, oh, they got on The Voice and now they're an overnight star.
Exactly.
More than likely,
yeah,
they have been singing for 20, 30, 40 years, and they've right. dedicated their entire life to that. And exactly. that persistence finally just paid off 20, exactly. 30, 40 years down the road.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Time out, though. They've made Break. It. They've made it. You know, you're doing well. Are you sipping margaritas on the beach?
Fuck no.
Like there's probably days that you're like, oh my God, I just want this thing to blow up.
So here's a notion. Grant Cardone, who I know you guys both really dig.
Love, yeah.
I personally am more of a, like, if I were to pick the top two guys in that kind of category for me, I'm more of a Gary Vee kind of a guy. I like his approach on stuff.
Right.
However, I still like Grant Cardone, and I was watching one of his videos the other day, and he said something that is like me to like the 150th percentile, which is everyone always asks, like, and my wife Allison, her mom does it all the time. She's like, you work so hard, you constantly work, blah, 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 blah. Like, relax, enjoy it, go on vacation, take it easy, you know, soak it in.
Exactly.
And I understand where they're coming from. But I think what they're doing is they're associating that, like, that's the grind and that's the hard work and then you
and
should
pain.
And then there should you should enjoy that. My thing is like, it's that creation that I love, that I enjoy. It is that day-to-day struggle. You know what I mean? Yeah. I enjoy that more than sipping margaritas. Yeah, so it's not that I'm doing something that I dislike so that I can later sip margaritas. It's I'm doing what I that is the equivalent of sipping margaritas for me.
Exactly.
That's what you love.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to a buddy of mine who's starting up his business. He's been going for about 5 years, doing really well. And I said, hey, man, he's getting married. And I said, where are you going on your honeymoon? And he said, his wife's, I don't want to say the name, but, you know, she's planning. I don't even want to go. Like, what do you mean you don't want to go? He says, I love what I'm doing. If I go there, I'm going to be sitting on my computer. This is my passion. I just want to build. And this is all I think about. I don't even want to go on vacation. Yeah. So I'm sure that's what you're...
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I get like that too. I love what I do, but when I'm gone, I don't escape from, you know, the computer.
Yeah.
I'm on it. I'm doing things because that's what I... It's just a passion.
And I think as long as you know that, like, if you know that that's what you love, like, I think there's plenty of people that maybe they do love the vacation.
Right.
Nothing wrong with that. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
And then you build your life around how you want to live that breakdown. Like if it's 50% work and 50% play or 80-20 or 90, whatever it is, as long as you know it and then you live around there, then
exactly.
Then you're good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Scott, I love that you're here because I am not interesting at all. I'm not entertaining. And so like the only way that I can come back and just get some camera time is if I bring someone interesting with me. So thank God you're here.
Okay.
But on the topic of struggle, glory, like Scott and I are both in insurance. You've been in insurance since you were young.
Yes.
And I'm sure the struggle was real.
It was real.
Can you share your story or...
Yeah, what I was kind of telling you about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, when I got started, imagine going in the life insurance business at age 22, and you have to sell life insurance to people that are not your age or older. Nobody wants to talk to you. Plus, I don't know what, you know, you really don't know what you're doing. You're just learning.
Exactly.
So I was telling these guys, I sold my mom a policy, sold my dad one, sold my uncle one, you know, and it's like, it was just a real struggle. So it took many years just to get it going, and just I really stuck with it. I want to be honest, like every Sunday I'd be looking in the newspaper going, in the want ads, like, there's got to be a better job than this. This is miserable. But during it, you know, truth of the matter, I was a janitor two nights a week a friend of mine who had a company, literally cleaning buildings, and it was horrible. I don't even want to describe what I went through.
Yeah.
Just a nightmare. And then also I delivered pizzas every Monday night and Saturday, just so I can have enough money. And then I would take that money and do a little advertising or take a CPA out to lunch. That's what I use my money for. So luckily, I lived with my parents till I was 23. And it was tough. Yeah. And then, yeah, it was tough. I just remember also, I moved in with Jesse Duma. Jesse was my very first roommate.
No way.
He had this apartment, yep. And we each had a room, and I didn't have any furniture. I would sit on the floor Indian style at night just cranking out phone calls, just trying to get to meet with people. I was late on my rent every single month. I owed $297 a month, and I was late every single month.
Wow.
It was just a tough time.
But then you figured it out. The message that's not put out there enough is the shit that you have to eat to get to the end.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes.
And social media just glorifies that even more.
Like, yeah.
All the influencers now, you know, even if it's so like, this is like very monetary or capitalistic, even if it's just like body image stuff, like you see models and all this stuff. And if that's all you follow, if you're obsessed with looking good, you probably follow a lot of models. And if you don't look like them, like you're pissed.
Yeah.
Right.
But you don't know that it took, you know, someone like Jeremy. God dang. Thanks for wearing a loser shirt this time. Take someone like Jeremy, like years, you know, to get to a point where you have a physique that looks like that. And everyone wants it overnight.
But it's, you know, everyone has this like weird assumption, like when they're like, all right, I'm going to be successful or I want to be successful. And they think, I don't know how the perception gets so skewed on the duration of time that it takes, because it's not tomorrow. It's not a year.
Right.
It's not 5 years.
Right.
I mean, you need to go in the, with it, it needs to be where you're going in the mindset with like, okay, 10 years.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But what happens is it gets 1 year in. And they're like, oh, fuck, this is hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're like, you're only in it a year. Right. And if we could just get across that it's, hey, you're only 10% of the way in right now.
Exactly.
And so I have this in the book. One of the biggest things I talk about in that opening chapter is the idea that I actually think part of the problem is almost how we're terming some of these, the mindsets and stuff like that. You think like the mindset of a champion, you know, building a mindset around success or build a mindset for success.
Yeah.
And the problem is, I think it presumes success.
Yep.
And I think that's the problem. It's the people who get there, it's not that they're willing to do anything to succeed.
Right.
It's that they're willing to do anything and still fail.
Right.
Right.
It's that's what it is. It's, are you willing to lose everything?
Mm-hmm.
And still come up short just to have an at-bat.
Mm-hmm.
That the regret of, you know, potentially 20 years down the road thinking like, man, I should have given it a shot. Like, that has to be the one and only thing that is making you do what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Not any, like, success to be out of the picture completely.
Right. Totally agree.
I agree. You got to be like, I mean, we've read many books, but like, you got to be obsessed.
Yeah, you have to.
All in. Balls to the wall, doing everything possible. You don't want to give up. And you are going to fail along the way.
Yeah.
But you learn from those experiences. You don't do that again, and you keep moving forward. I totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
I heard I was talking to some guys the other day and about one of their friends who was just kind of starting a business, just kind of got going, is less than a year in, I believe, something like that.
Okay.
And they said something that literally irritated the shit out of me.
Did you tell them that?
No, I should have.
Come on, you got to be honest with people.
Because I was like, hey, how's your buddy's business doing? Is it going well? And, you know, they were like, I think he's kind of, it's okay. He's kind of struggling, whatever. And he goes, he just tells me he's tired. I'm like, of course you're fucking tired.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What are you like? I don't want to hear that you're tired. Like that just to me, for anyone that's gone through that's eaten shit and you know what I mean? And had to deliver pizzas and do whatever is necessary and make phone calls cross-legged on the floor.
Right.
Like that's an insult to the people who went through that.
Right, yep.
Like, don't tell me you're tired. Like, did you not expect to be tired? Because when you tell me you're tired, that tells me like you didn't expect it to be this hard.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Or be tired, just don't make money.
Yeah, exactly. Like, right. Realize it's a part of the process.
I had that happen recently with all the like the Facebook communities and stuff. I'm in a page for like business people. And the one guy literally said, it was a question to the group. And he said, really struggling with my laziness. It's hard for me to, you know, really want to work on my business. Do you guys have any suggestions?
Go get a job.
Yeah.
You are not an job. Entrepreneur.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in the wrong spot.
You're in the wrong spot. Yeah. And that's where you got to know, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. They're fucking, you can, he might be the guy that like, if he's given direction from a CEO, a supervisor of some kind, right. Like he could kill it.
Exactly.
But he can't do it on his own, or she or whoever it is.
Right.
You got to know who you are.
Doesn't seem like they have it inside of them.
No.
That
person. They just don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that would be the answer.
Right. Exactly.
Just stop. Yeah.
just ride the laziness.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And be okay with it.
Yeah.
You know? So you're totally right. I love the idea of eat shit for the 5, 10, 15, 20 years before you really, you know, can call yourself a success. Mind you, like, do you call yourself a success?
No.
See, the successful people never are happy. It's crazy.
Well, it goes back to the 10 out of 10 thing. It's just, I think it's the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. But like if you were to pivot that to sales, it's the same freaking thing. Like sales is such a game of a marathon. Like you said, in your Instagram post, I gave myself a 6. And like everyone thinks I'm a sales guy. And I'm like, I'm really not that much of a sales guy. It's just you're shaking your head.
I don't think I'm a sales guy either. I agree with you.
I thought you were saying, yeah, you're not a sales guy.
No, I agree. I'm
just kidding about it.
It's okay until someone else agrees with you.
Yeah, you're exactly. You're not a sales guy.
I'm just kidding. Leave. But 95% of the people you're ever going to talk to aren't going to do business with you for sure in the same year. I mean, maybe never,
right?
But it's just a marathon game. Like you can't look for the overnight success. You just got it. It's getting your word out there, talking to person after person after person. The person you thought was going to buy the first time is never going to buy. And some random person you talk to wants, you know, to buy immediately. It's just like,
and I think it's kind of in the same sense that we talked about, like just business sales, same way. It's being okay with failure, but it's almost expecting it as well. Like
100%.
If I'm in sales, like I'm going to sell, and there are going to be probably more people that say no that say yes.
Yep.
And you have go in knowing that and just not give a shit. Like you just, like it can't matter. You like when ego and anything else gets in the way, we got this guy in South Bay right now, trainer.
Yeah.
Shout out, Nick Cohen, fucking killing it, brother.
Nick.
He's selling PT like crazy right now, and he obviously is a phenomenal coach and trainer and all of that. But the best thing about him is he knows who he is, he knows his lane, and there's zero fear he just doesn't care.
He doesn't care about rejection.
No, he doesn't care about rejection whatsoever. If someone says no. Cool. Like, I'm still gonna give you some. I'm still gonna here's some extra tip. Like, even though you said no, like here's some extra stuff that I think that would be awesome and helpful for you.
Yep.
And then go on to the next person.
Love it.
Yeah, I think part of the reason maybe he's killing it is I think salespeople that really need the sale, their customers see it or their client, you know, whoever. And Nick, obviously, I don't know him, but obviously, he doesn't need the sale. So he's just doing what's right for the client.
Yeah.
Obviously, just, hey, you need this, and he's trying to sell it. That's probably why he's selling more. And I noticed for me, as I said, I was started young. You really need money really bad, so you're trying to sell everything. And not that I'm this super success at all, like you both said, I don't feel successful, but
you are.
I'm to the point where if I just want to do the right thing for the client. Otherwise, I need money like everybody else, but I don't need the sale to change my life at this point. So I think I sell a lot more that way because I just want to do what's right for them. That's it. Yeah.
I think there are a couple comments, and we'll go through them here in a little bit, of people that kind of said that exact thing.
Yep.
People aren't dumb.
Like, they just aren't, like, they can read everything that's coming out of your mouth, your body language, what your intentions are. And if there are, you know what I mean? If, like, you're just off, people see it, they feel it. What's his name? God, I can't think of his name right now. But it's that concept of you don't really know why you don't want to buy something, but there's just kind of like this gut feeling that you're like, it just doesn't feel right. I don't know what it is, but no.
Right.
And it's that like emotional like desire, like just like the why you buy something, not necessarily what you buy, that affects so many people's decisions.
Totally.
And like people's intuition for that stuff, like they can scope it out real easy.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all about kind of building up your internal kind of process of how you're going to present yourself, how you're going to come across to your client, how you're going to build rapport, stuff like that, and asking the right questions. And I feel like if I were to talk about like why I consider myself a six, it's because like, yeah, I know how to sell and like, you know, whatever experiment you're planning for this, I'm going to do terrible because like I see sales like mastery as, you know, your process, you know, the formula, you know, at any point that you're talking to someone, what stage they're in and how to get them to the next stage. And while I know all the right things to say and the right questions to ask, I don't have that kind of like emotional tie to my permanent process.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a huge part of it.
I don't have it either. And I know you're supposed to do that. No, I don't. I've been doing this 28 years. I still don't have that down. I don't know how many people are going to watch this, but I'm more of like we're just talking as friends. Yeah. I'm more of like I'm almost like I get referrals, almost all my business are referrals, but I'm more of like an order taker. I'm asking questions of what they want and I'm presenting what I think is the very best thing for what they want or what they need.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, so on that note, because I think that's the root of all sales is knowing again what they want and why someone would want to buy something, not necessarily like what they're buying. Right. Like for example, like iPhone. Like if we were to, if like this would be one of the items that we were to talk about, I think most people talk about, all right, I'm going to sell you this iPhone. It has 60 gigs of memory and it's got a 4K screen and all like the technical mumbo jumbo, right? Exactly. Like, you can put all your songs on here and that kind of stuff. But like, that's not why we buy the phone.
Right.
It has nothing to do with why we buy the phone. Exactly. And whether we're talking about phones or something else, too many people sell the phone.
Right.
They don't sell why you use the phone, which is anything from like this is going to save you 5 hours a day, every day. Like, you have absolute control over your life because like, you don't have to. You need to send an email. You can do it here. You don't have to go back on your computer and log in your computer. Like, you can be in touch with someone. And you know, like, it's the life experience benefit to having this that you buy it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. No one buys, like, in our world, benefit periods and terms of insurance. Like, so the one thing I always think back to, it's really funny, actually, my two biggest fails are all in this room, in this camera. So one, I did the lunch and learn at your office, and that was still like the worst memory of my career. And I remember walking back to my car, and I'm like, I will never, never let that happen again. I mean, I will save the entire
story.
You're
too hard on yourself. You're way too hard on yourself.
I want to hear this story.
At one point, I had to park like three blocks away. I was already, I think, 5 minutes late. I was carrying two bags of Wood Ranch and my briefcase, running down Ventura Boulevard, trying to get to his office on time because his partner was there. And like, he's, of course, said a bunch of great things about me and all this stuff. Here I am late. By the time I get up there, like, the air is still... I'm in a suit. I'm just sweating profusely. And I'm like, can I use the restroom? I didn't even have to go pee. I was like wiping down my entire body, like under my shirt and stuff. And I'm like, and then you could see it like leaking through. And I'm like, God, this is terrible. So then I'm all like fumbled by the time I get there. And I'm just going through the of what I know about, you know, the product and how I'm trying to help them. And I was just so discombobulated. I didn't focus on like why I was there and who I was talking to. And I remember walking back to my car and I'm like, I will never, never let a meeting like that happen again.
He's then, being way too hard on himself. I'm just telling you.
I know, but you are your own worst critic. Yeah. Always.
You're with me, though. Who
you
cares?
Should be. Yeah. Yeah. See, that's what you would say, but no, I care.
Okay.
That's when you got to shine. Like, yeah. Same with you. Like, I don't know when it was, like 3 or 4 years ago when I talked to you about disability insurance.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was driving here. I'm like, okay, he has 3 benefit period options. Like, this one's priced here, this one's priced here, and this one's this much benefit. I'm like, okay, you know, going through it. And then I get up to your office and I'm like, I'm so ready just to like puke all this disability insurance information to you because it's going to be so helpful and you're going to love it. Like, as soon as you hear retirement age benefit period, like, you're just going to be like, I'll take it. Done. I'll take it. And I was like, I got the app. Like, we're ready to go. And I just remember talking to you and you're like, okay, so like, why, you know, like, what would happen to me that I would use this? And I'm like, you get sick or you get hurt. You're like, yeah, but if that happens, you know, the way my business runs, like, it wouldn't be too bad for this amount of time. I'm like, well, shit, I didn't think about that. I'm like, okay, well, it has like a compassionate care rider and it would take care of, you know, Allison, or you could take care of Allison if something happened. Okay, but what would need to happen to her, you know? Well, and it was just like, oh my God, I focused like so much on this product. I was like, that was the worst thing.
Well, and I think whether it's that example or any other example, and I'm not saying this is a foolproof way across the board, but when you sell the product, the phone, the policy itself, it's so easy to point out something that you wouldn't use about it.
Right.
When you sell the why and the back end and the emotional side, like, that's way harder to find a rebuttal against.
Exactly.
You know, I have my business partner's an insurance thing. He just sent out something to all people that refer him business. I thought it was really interesting. So he had a pen made with the name of our company on it, and it looks like a drill. So he sent out this thing with the pen, and it said, I forgot how many people, 2,876 drill bits were bought last year. But nobody wanted the drill. They wanted the hole. So basically saying, no one's buying the drill. They're buying for whatever you're selling. Like, for us, insurance is all peace of mind and love.
Yeah,
exactly. We're selling paper.
Right.
That's all we're selling,
yeah,
exactly. Right? Exactly. So it's just about selling what it's the end result, like what your phone was. You know, what's it going to do for you?
Yeah.
That's my favorite Gary Vee example right there.
Oh, was it a drill bit?
Yeah.
No one
walks into Home Depot.
Oh, was it a Gary Vee thing?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know. Yeah,
Or Grant, I don't know. But no one walks into Home Depot wanting to buy a drill and a drill bit. They want a hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. So I've come a long way. Not that I'm, you know, exceptional in sales.
By the way, I came in the next week, said all the right things, filled that hole. I sold him disability insurance.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I love it.
Thanks for screwing up.
I teed it up. That's good.
Okay. All right, let's go through. I'm going to pull this up right now on the post.
I feel so guilty. I didn't answer the last one. It was just so, it was like a two-layered, and then it was like really thoughtful answers.
How was that, Mike?
didn't want a third bad experience to enter your world?
Exactly.
If you put that stuff on MySpace, I would see it. I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
MySpace. Did you have a MySpace?
Of course I had MySpace.
Did. Well, I know you didn't.
Yeah. I was friends with Tom.
I think.
Do you remember?
He was the main guy. He was like the guy, right?
He was like the guy.
Too. Yeah.
We were best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was my first. He was my number one.
Jeremy, did you have MySpace?
Hell yeah. Top five.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Sometimes I still throw that at people. Like, we just had a conference in San Diego, and I'll be like, add me on MySpace. Here's my card. Add me on MySpace. Yeah. I'm going social. Add me on MySpace. Love it.
I see a lot. There's a lot of confidence comes up a lot, and I think it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Absolutely.
I mean, it's pretty much, I would say, in 3 out of every 4.
Total confidence.
People saying that confidence is important.
Oh, yeah.
You guys pretty much on.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. For that reason, I think that you said earlier, which is like, if people see that you're not.
Right.
Why?
That's what I lacked at both.
Yeah. Especially for your guys' thing. I mean, how important do you guys think And all this people skills is a very broad term, because I think confidence is actually a part of people skills. Mm-hmm. But how big of an impact do you think that plays in everything?
People skills?
Yeah. And we're talking about sales and all that kind of stuff.
I think when you're, if it's face-to-face, it's not internet sales.
Correct. Yeah, I'm saying face-to-face.
I think it's, confidence and sales ability and being able to relate to the person is just, it's really key.
Yeah,
to the whole thing. Cause I think people only buy from you when they like and trust you. Otherwise, they're not going to buy from you.
Yeah.
Do you think everyone has it in them?
So that's that's an awesome question. So, and I can get away with saying this now. Maybe Jeremy will have to edit this out. We'll see. That's actually a debate that I have in my head constantly as I'm writing this book.
Yeah.
Because obviously, I would like to... everyone to have that ability to it have, for it to be a learned or developed skill.
Right.
But I don't know if it is. And so when I'm writing this book and I'm trying to motivate people and inspire people to like, hey, look, do this, this, and that to build your confidence and your self-esteem. But there's definitely a part of me where I'm like, are you even going to be able to?
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Is there what elements, mm-hmm. people skills or whatever, that are just like you have it or you don't?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard because obviously we're sitting here, we're in sales, and that's because we've just kind of been attracted to it because we're people. Right. People.
Or people. Yeah. People.
People. Person. People.
Yeah. Or if it's something that happens one of the things I think it's something that happens at such an early age that defines and kind of makes you who mm-hmm. you are. Mm-hmm. That I think that has a profound effect on, like, confidence, mm-hmm. for an example. Like, I think the people who have been beaten down by their parents at an early age, like, I think you can live through shit and hell and have your parents fighting and arguing and divorced and live in kind of a shitty upbringing and maybe your dad left you or your mom left you or whatever it is. Like, I think none of that has the impact that like parents that like beat down,
You're never going to be good enough.
You're never going to be good enough and that kind of stuff. Like, I think that has like a long lasting, profound effect on a human being.
Lifetime.
Yeah.
I think it does. I also think it can be different. Like, I've always heard successful people, they get successful because they always have something to prove to somebody.
Mm-hmm. True.
So I think it could go both ways, but I see your point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll always go for the person with the chip on their shoulder.
Yes.
Absolutely. 100%. But so like the people skills. I've struggled with this because like I see people that might not have people skills in every scenario, or they might not think they have people skills at all. And then I see them in like some environment and they're just like flourishing. And I'm like, whoa, I'm like, you have it. And like, no, I don't. And then, you know, they go back into their shell and it's just like, it's so weird. I don't know like where it.
My thing is I think that is knowing your lane and staying in it.
Yeah.
Right? I think people skills matter.
Right.
I had this exact conversation actually yesterday. I think people skills matter, but if you don't have people skills, you can still win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure. I do. I don't think it's like you have to have it to be able to win. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe the people that don't have people skills at least have like a self-awareness and confidence about themselves that they're not trying to be somebody different. They're not trying, you know what I mean? Like, they're not trying to be that super charismatic individual because then it comes off awkward.
Right.
And so they excel because they're genuine,
mm-hmm.
and people see that genuineness. And so if you have that along with, you know, the product knowledge or whatever, and you know what I mean, the other person is confident in whatever that individual is selling, that still comes across well.
Totally.
No, I agree.
Totally agree. Yeah. I'm excited for that book, man.
Yeah.
I've been hearing about it for 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, the part of my problem, I'm doing it right now because I want to reread everything prior to my last 3 chapters so that I can retie everything back in and so that it flows real well. And so I just started, and mind you, I've already rewritten and done it a handful of times.
I'm going through, and now I'm like nitpicking everything.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm like, should I just fucking stop?
Just get it done.
Just stop just reading it, because every time I go back, like, don't get me wrong, I think it gets better.
Right.
But like, if I reread it again, like, I'm just gonna be like, oh, and then spend another 4 days rewriting chapter one again.
Yep. Just throw it out there.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Make it 80. Make it at least 80% there.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be good enough.
Yeah.
You can always revise it and redo another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go for good, not perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, perfect doesn't exist.
No.
No.
And that's the cycle I feel like myself that I'm getting in right now.
Totally. Gary Vee talks about that all the time. He's like, you'll find misspellings and grammar and blah, blah, blah in my book. He's like, I don't care. Like, no one ever stopped reading my book because I misspelled a word or forgot the two or forgot the way on the end. It's like, just get it out
there. Now, I think that your exact comment is something that I try to preach and coach to all of our staff here is that 80% rule.
Right.
Yeah.
That I think, if it can be done at least at an 80% of what perfection could potentially be,
right.
98% of the population doesn't know the difference.
Yeah, I agree.
And
exactly.
Yeah.
I agree.
Not going to notice.
Yeah.
Or at least not enough for it to affect business or anything else.
Are you going
to
record it on Audible too?
Yeah.
Good.
There you go.
Yeah. I like that. You have to narrate it though.
No, I know. That's like the thing now is like, you can't have somebody else. Like, you have to do it.
That's the worst.
Yeah. What, do you have to listen to some random person talk?
Yeah. And it's just like, wah, 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 wah. And I'm like, gosh, this would have been so much better with the author.
I went through two or three ghostwriters also for this. And again, I think I probably just need to drop more money on like a much better ghostwriter.
Right.
But I know at least for the, I think it'll help too. Like maybe in the future it'll be easier to get one because I'll have a book that they understand how I speak, how I write. So then it's easier for them to emulate it. Cause right now, like I'm reading, like I would give them, X amount of here's the content and they would put it into like, five pages or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, that's fucking horrible. Yeah. that doesn't sound like me. It sounds.
You're doing it yourself.
Oh yeah, I'm doing it myself. Yeah, I'm 100% doing it myself.
I
started doing it myself, and then I was like, man, this is a lot. So I tried the ghostwriter thing, and then just we could not get on the same page, and I didn't really care for how they were writing it, and I don't consider myself to be some. Well, I definitely don't consider myself to be some amazing. You know what I mean? Author, writer. Yeah. Or even an articulate speaker, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, my words are like 7th, 8th, and 9th grade vocabulary, basic stuff.
Exactly.
And this guy was using like big fancy words. I'm like, I don't speak like that.
Right. Exactly.
When I read books, I don't even know what that means.
I think people like the Gary V's and the Grant Cardone's and the Tony Robbins because their books are the way they speak.
Yeah.
Their voice.
And that's what I want to do. Like, I'm trying to do it just how you would listen to someone talk rather than some complex narrative.
Right. So, forgive me. I don't know if I've ever asked a question. Like, why did you write this book?
Like the content or just like the book itself?
Just the book itself.
I think the reason why I asked that is because when I initially started writing the book, it was about something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I wanted to write the book to challenge myself. I think initially, that was one of the first things that I wanted to do. Like, again, I've never considered myself to be a good writer or anything like that, but I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to motivate and inspire people in some way, shape, or form. When I started to write it initially, and I think the very first one was it was very tied into fitness and health, and I stopped writing it. Because I wasn't passionate about what I was writing about. And so I started to switch gears and go more towards the business side. And then I ended up even going more towards just more of a broader mindset as well. Finally ended up where it is now. The passion is what for like the whole mindset for success in any way, shape or form, like whether you're someone trying to get into business, whether you're someone in fitness and you need to figure out what that mindset is to like get you past those first 4 weeks that everyone wants to quit at.
Yeah, right.
Like I wanted to make it for everybody, but to be able to do that and to challenge myself, I had to find the avenue that would
keep me motivated and inspired to actually keep writing it.
Exactly.
So
that's awesome.
Like and it's to a point now where like I actually enjoy it. I get, you know, and I I'll get kind of fired up as I'm writing it and whatnot because it starts to flow and make sense. And whereas before, in the very beginning, it was more forced.
Exactly. Yeah.
Makes sense.
That's interesting. It's the hardest. Yeah.
Only because we were talking about success and failure and going really hard to get where you want to go. I don't even know your story. I was a member. You were doing your trainings at the college, and we'd meet really early and run around the, you know, you had your whole, no equipment or anything. Yeah, and then I remember you stopped doing that, and we started getting these amazing emails, and it was just like, I couldn't wait for you to open the channel. Even though you were Gladiator program, you had all these cool programs, but did you struggle? Did you start? I mean, what you built is amazing. Just, I thought you just had complete balls to open this gym, you know, with nothing, right? So, I mean, where did you start that you got to this? I'm asking because I don't know your story.
Yeah. The story is, again, I think it literally almost kind of falls in the same category as the book in the sense that I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like, I didn't come from some, you know, other than playing sports, not like I came from a background of being of a family of personal trainers or anything like that. You know what I mean? Where this was my path. It was, hey, I'm gonna get into personal training and kind of figure out as I go. While I maybe even want to become a cop, I don't know what I want to do right now. I just graduated college. I'm a fucking lost 23-year-old.
Yeah.
Right.
And as I started to get into the personal training thing, which at that time was more of like a place filler in my life, I really started to find a passion for the business, the marketing aspect, that side of it. And I forget what I was talking to. I was talking to a trainer. So I did a talk at some lecture thing for just personal trainers. And I was telling this story because, you know, they're asking, how do you become successful?
Right.
And same thing with a book. Like, it's just start. Like, just fucking do something. Right. Like, stop trying to make it perfect and wait for, you know what I mean? Like, just do it. And so that very first boot camp that you guys at some point were both a part of, the very first one I did, I fucking made horrible. Like, if anybody that is still around that was a part of those first couple, like handmade on my computer, like using Word, like nothing fancy, like getting clip art and pasting it on the Word doc, you know, 8-week boot camp, whatever, and fucking handheld, like fucking put them in people's mailboxes.
Wow.
I got, no joke, two. I don't know how many, I mean, thousands of mailboxes I probably put them in. I got two people, that's it, to do that very first boot camp. And the only time I had at that time was I did the 5 or 5:30. I think it was 5:30.
It was early.
5:30 a.m., I got two people. I could have been like,
was it you?
No.
No.
I could have been like, you know what?
Yeah.
This didn't work, which is, I think, what most people do. Yeah. This didn't work. I just spent who knows how many hours.
Exactly. You did this yourself.
Did it myself.
And hand-delivered.
Hand-delivered them. Put them in people's mail, like illegally, because you're not supposed to do that shit.
Right.
I illegally put stuff in people's mailboxes. Yeah. And I got two. That's it. And I usually could have been like, you know what? This didn't work. Screw it. Whatever. It's not enough. It's not worth my time, which is all that drives the shit. That drives me fucking insane when people don't want to do something because they think you should get paid for it or whatever.
Exactly.
Two people the next time turned into four. Four turned into 10. 10 then turned into 22.
Wow.
Yeah. And the rest is history.
Yep.
That's how I did that. And that's when I started to fall in love with the business aspect inside of things. Once I realized that business was my passion, I realized that's the route I wanted to go. And I never wanted to stay stagnant. And I got stagnant from a growth, income, whatever standpoint. I mean, I was working, you know, however many hours a week training, 60, 70, whatever it was. There were no more hours in the day to book clients.
Right.
I couldn't charge more because, you know, people are only going to pay so much per hour.
Yep.
So the only option at that point, if I didn't, because it was literally, like, I saw my client base grow, everything, income grow every single year over year over year. And then the very first year where the growth stopped and it was the same, it was within months of that I said, I've been thinking about this for a while and it's been scaring the shit out of me, obviously.
Right.
But like, that's the only path and that's where I have to go. And I don't know what it was, and I've talked about this before. There was one morning where it all went from like just like fear of like, fuck, that's a big risk, risking everything, right, just throwing my nuts on the table, right, and you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And waking up that next day and it being like, all that fear was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all it comes back to is just, it was that absolute realization that the fear of regret,
yeah,
that day, whatever it was that transpired, right, in that period,
right,
that all of a sudden outweighed the fear of losing.
Yeah.
And that's when it was like, let's go.
Right? Yeah. All exactly. in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I've actually, you know this story. Because.
I know a lot.
How much?
More, more than you want to know.
So I actually, this is a kind of a cool transition to a story that I've actually kind of wanted to say on the Tony V Project, but I haven't had the opportunity until I think right now. I think it's a good transition. You asked me. In my office, me and you were chatting a year ago, months ago,
yep,
and I don't know what, I don't even know the context of your original question, but it was something along the lines of like, what makes you who you are? Do you have any stories that have made you kind of who you are?
Mm-hmm.
And I told you two. One of them I think is harder for people to understand because it's part of the reason why I am so heavy on the regret thing when I didn't play football. And I regretted not playing football because of the dumbass excuse because I didn't want to lose my summer and that kind of a thing. And that, as dumb as that may sound to most people, is part of the reason why I'm not going to feel regret again.
Yeah. Right.
The other story about my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad now does real estate and does really well. But when I was growing up, I mean, he was a cop.
Mm-hmm.
My parents got divorced early on. And, you know, when your dad's a cop and your mom was a stay-at-home mom at the time or doing odd jobs here and there, it's one of the things, like, we weren't struggling for money. Yeah. Like, it's not like we were, like, eating food off the floor, but we definitely weren't rolling in dough either. You know, your average, probably whatever household.
Exactly.
But when the divorce came, you know, that's something that can crush a family, like, financially.
Yep.
And it was super hard on my family financially.
Right.
My dad was always like a guy's guy, you know what I mean? Someone who I was afraid of, that he whooped my ass as a child, but that you always respected with just like an absolute, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And that kind of guy who, you know, didn't really show emotion, didn't cry, didn't do, you know, none of that stuff. The kind of guy, you know, your stereotypical, like, superhero dad, how you always look at your father, like a man's man. That's like, that's awesome. How you look at him, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I'll never forget, he was always a fucking unreal hard worker. I mean, when he was a cop, I mean, works a million hours of overtime just so, like, we could have, like, a good Christmas as kids or go on vacation, go to Havasu or Vegas, wherever we went, right? Like, he always busted his ass and is really part of the reason why I have such a strong work ethic instilled in me today.
Mm-hmm.
That divorce came, and I remember it being Christmas. I don't remember exactly how old I was. I want to say I was probably around 12, 11, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And it is probably still to this day one of the only times I've ever seen my father cry.
Damn.
And he was crying because he had to tell me, his son, that he wasn't going to be able to afford Christmas presents this year. I was old enough to not know I was old enough to know that there was no Santa, so he could obviously drop that. It was probably, I'll never know how hard it was for him to say that to me, but I can only imagine. And it's obviously something that has stuck with me through today.
Exactly.
And I can only imagine the pain and how hard that is to tell your son that, especially when you're as prideful as I know he was or is.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment has had like such a profound impact on me. Just from a stance of, I know we are not in an absolute control of anything and everything that happens to us. I know that.
Yep.
I don't think my dad planned to have a divorce and have it, you know what I mean, be a financial burden and whatnot.
Exactly.
But I at least know that I am going to do anything and everything within my power to
attempt to prevent something like that, because I never want to have to do and go through what he had to go through.
Yeah.
And so that is another thing that fucking just drives me, because it looked like hell for him to go through, and I don't want to have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dude, I love that story.
I do too.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I can't say mine's the same, but it's very similar.
Really?
Just, you know, my parents, great parents, loving household, no money, just really tight. My dad was one of those guys that would just try different things, and he always tried but failed.
Yeah.
And, really good guy, but at the same time, we just never had enough. I just remember it was always a struggle. My mother always freaking out about money.
Yeah.
Said I just never wanted to be like that. Not that I haven't. I told you my start was like that. I went through a divorce, and you go through it again, but I don't ever want to be like that again. I don't want my kids. I overcompensate for my kids because I don't want them to go through, not that I had a bad life, but I don't want them to feel the way I did. Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's horrible. Yeah.
Mine finally kicked into gear different. It's not financially, but especially with the gym. I remember the day, it was the day, the next morning after my dad had passed away. So he passed away like at night. I was at the hospital at midnight. I was supposed to stay the night there. Ended up going home, and I was like, I got up in the morning. I'm like, I don't know what to do. It was a Friday. So I still came into the gym in the morning and still went to work that day. And I remember I told you that morning, I'm like, dude, my dad passed away.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking like, you know, people were like, why are you here? And I'm like, because my dad can't be here. Like, and it was that while he was sick too, is like, he physically cannot be here to give his all to something that he wants to do or improves his health or whatever. He literally cannot. He does not have the option to do this. So I am taking that, and that's the exact reason I'm doing this. Dude, right in line with yours. That's insane. I love that.
It's if this is any message to any parents out there, you know, mothers, fathers, et cetera, like, it could be shit that you think is a bad experience, or the point is like everything you do has such an impact, right? It's the potential to be such an impact.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so like, just never short yourself on the ability that you have to inspire someone, period. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's crazy.
Yeah. So just share the video, Mom. That's all I'm asking. Share it.
Me too, Mom. Make sure you like it. Tag me. Tag my name to it, too.
If my mom shares or comments, it's going to be like that stereotypical mom comment. Mm-hmm. Oh, honey, you look so cute on camera. I love you. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
I'm always like, oh, Mom.
Yeah. That was my mom. You look good. I can't get the sound to work. I'm like, well, that's weird. A thousand other people did. Oh, God.
Well, thanks, guys.
Dude,
thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. It was a good time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for sharing your...
I didn't share much.
The wisdom.
Thanks for making my suit look ugly.
Yeah.
I gotta go tell my rental place to step it up.
Cool. Okay. All right, guys.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Love you.
Absolutely. Love you guys. Both y'all.
I always hug this.
See you guys next week.